Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Michael Lamon's 1991 film Hudson Hawk. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Thundercats, ho!
I don't even know how to respond to that, other than I think they're actually working on like a TV revamping of the Thundercats. Is that right? Do you know anything about this?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you been watching the original recently? Is that why you've...
I was until they took it off on demand. Now I can't watch it.
Okay. All right.
Thanks for rubbing that in.
You brought it up. joining us also today is a good friend of mine. He is a production assistant on the hit NBC comedy 30 Rock. Mark Carosello, thanks so much for joining us on the Not Just New Movies podcast.
Hey, how's it going?
It is going very well. So do you have any cool stories from the set of 30 Rock? I'm not going to ask you to go in depth on anything, but just, you know, anything cool that's happened to you that you can think of off the top of your head?
Other than seeing Tracy Morgan naked every day, I can't think of anything really. It was a really awesome experience.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you have any kind of stories where you've passed Alec Baldwin or Tina Fey in the hall and kind of given them like a little salute or something like that?
Yeah,
or?
Well, when Alec comes to work, it's like the president has arrived. He has kind of this here comes the chief kind of play as everyone's like, hello, Alec, hello, Alec, hello. And he's like, hello, hello, hello. It's pretty funny. And Tina was just super cool, awesome, normal. She's just like the coolest person ever and like the smartest probably person I'll ever be in a room with.
And we actually, it was funny because Pat, who's a former co-host on the show, and I were watching an episode of 30 Rock earlier this season. We saw you walking around in the background. You're dressed up as like a waiter or something.
Yeah,
sort of,
that was like a last minute thing. It was for the Christmas episode. It took place in Alex's apartment, and they didn't have anybody to open a door, I guess, when he had guests over. And Alex said, I guess at the last second, Jack Donaghy wouldn't open his own door for a dinner party. So they're like, oh, yeah, of course we have a guy. So they're like, they didn't have a guy. Mm-hmm. So they went upstairs and they're like, hey, Mark, you're going to go on camera. And I'm like, okay. So they put me in a James Bond type, or in my eyes, it was a James Bond type outfit. And I was his butler. So
nice.
That was kind of fun. I did sign, he has this wall of all the guest stars that have signed, all the guest stars that have been on the show, mm-hmm. Signed the wall, and I signed the wall. It was my pleasure butlering you.
Did you sign the wall?
And I signed it. Alec Baldwin's
like
wall,
yeah. At his request, or did you just do it?
It was
when you
were no. It was actually his hair guy. It's like, oh yeah, you got to sign the wall
because
you were in
cool.
It. I was like, does he even remember me? And he's like, oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, that reminds me. Tyler and I used to work at this. At this pool, like a snack bar at a pool, and this one guy who worked for the same kind of parent company or whatever was in the hospital and like had this card passed around to every member of the company, and we'd never met this guy before. So his name was Roger, and I remember Tyler and I signing this thing like, go get him, Rog, or something like that.
right.
Like we've never met this guy before. So.
Well, for the record, I have never seen Tracy Morgan naked.
Okay. So. All right, just to clear that up.
Just underwear.
So if you guys are just joining us for the very first time, we start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching and move into our review of the week. We also finish up with listener voicemails and emails. So you guys can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So Tyler, I believe it is your turn for the character name game this week. What do you got for us?
The character's name for the character name game this week is John Thatcher.
Ooh.
John Thatcher.
This is, but we'll
John
see.
Thatcher.
All right,
John
so,
Thatcher, Ben. And it's not the Chicago Code.
It's not. We'll get to that in just a second. So, yeah, for we'll come back and return to the character name game at the very end. So just be thinking about that. We'll try to
guess. I can't wait.
We'll try to guess what movie that character is from. So let's go ahead and move into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about any sort of TV we've been watching, any special events, concerts we've been to, any movies or anything recently. So, Tyler, we generally start with you. Let's keep that going. What have you been consuming this week?
Well, I recently finished the Nature Boy Ric Flair's autobiography.
Woo!
Okay.
Have you ever read this, Ben?
No.
Mark? Anybody?
No? Not yet.
you know, born in, like, Minnesota. No, wait. Yeah, well, I won't go into the schematics of it. I didn't really learn a lot, but you know, he's a pretty awesome guy. He complained a lot in the book. He met some challenges with his self-confidence in like the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And now he's just a really old guy that still wrestles.
How old is he now? Is he like 94?
He's 62.
62.
Yeah.
At an old job, when I worked with Ben, I did pitch a pilot. I pitched an idea for a Ric Flair reality show, like right after he got divorced, like Ric Flair on the single scene. But it did not get picked up, sadly. It could have been pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty ridiculous.
Just for the record, Mark, I think also at that same job, you also pitched the concept for a Steven Seagal reality show.
I did, yes.
And then our company was like, no, that's stupid.
Yep.
And then, of course, a Steven Seagal reality show called Lawman came out like the next year or something.
Absolutely. So. That's one infuriating part of that job.
All right. So how was the autobiography, Brenzy?
I don't think Ric Flair dates. I think he just bangs whatever girls in the town he's in that night. According to this autobiography,
Flair, it's over.
Right. Yeah, the book, it's pretty easy to read, and I don't know how much of it he actually wrote, because it's always like by Ric Flair and then some other guy that helps out. But I think it was written in like 2003 or something, and you know, it wasn't quote unquote like real, like as he was taught, because he was still working for the company that he was writing about, so obviously there's not going to be anything, you know, too scandalous in there.
Yeah.
But he did come out and say a lot of stuff about people he didn't like in the business, which is always kind of funny. And then these guys write their books based on, you know, the insults they receive from other books so that they can trash talk to each other. And it's all just one big, you know, gangbang of insults.
Yeah, bringing the trash talk to the literary realm.
Yeah. It's almost like 400 pages, but I read it fairly quickly.
Okay, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. I guess his son is a wrestler now,
mm-hmm.
but he still wrestles. Ric Flair still wrestles today. He still gets bloody and like all that, jumps from the ring and all that stuff. So he's pretty spry for a 62-year-old.
Yeah, he has two sons. I think they both wrestle, don't they? Or one used to.
Yeah, one used to, and I think one still does.
Interesting.
And then his daughters. Yeah, he's got two daughters.
Cool.
That's the boring part, though. I like the wrestling parts.
So would you recommend this to people who don't really give a crap about wrestling, or is this...
No, I would recommend it to people who really want to know about Ric Flair.
That seems like a common sense thing, but I guess...
Yeah, because it is really in-depth. Like, he just rolls off, like, random guys' names from the 1970s, and you're not going to be able to...
Okay.
You're going to have to, like, Google everybody that he talks about.
Okay.
The other thing I've been consuming is King's Quest, The Silver Lining. It's a free computer game that you can download, obviously... It's okayed by the company that owns the King's Quest franchise, but they're not making any money off of it.
Okay.
And it's gone through this whole, like, I don't know if I've mentioned it here before, but it's gone through this whole series of cease and desist letters since, like, 2003 or 2004. I can't remember when I first started keeping up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they would make some progress, and then the company that owned the franchise would be like, nope, screw you guys, stop making it. And so they would stop, and then they'd start making it again, and they'd be like, nope, screw you, stop. And so now they're just now finishing, or they finished the game, I guess, and they're releasing it. And the first episode, and I've reviewed it on my blog, but the first episode was, I'm teetering my hand to give a so-so
right.
for those that can't see me. And I just finished the second episode, and I'm going to have a review of that up. But it's pretty freaking ridiculous as far as trying to figure out the puzzles, because
mm-hmm.
you know, usually in the old games there were hints, or at least little hints, and some common sense involved, as oh man, maybe I should use this item here, that would make sense, right? It's the worst when they don't make sense, because how are you to know to use this item here if you're if common sense doesn't call for it,
right?
So I have some pretty you know, not hateful but very critical things to say about episode two, but maybe the you know, maybe episode three will be better. I don't know.
So is this one of those games that was created, like, was it created in 2003, or
they started it in 2003? I think, or at least that's when I jumped on board. Like,
and
they had a team of people working for free, like
mm-hmm.
writing the story, doing the artwork, and they could have, because I don't know. There's a whole discussion behind this, but there's a game engine that you can use And it makes games easy to make for people that do it for free. Mm-hmm. But instead, they went and did, like, the 3D rendering and, like, all this stuff that, you know, I mean, it looks good, I guess, but it took a really long time to do it. So I've felt that they should have just gone with the engine, the computer gaming engine, and just, you know, wrote the story and then popped it out. But whatever.
So this is not a text adventure, then.
No, it's a game that you play.
There was a super old King's Quest. Wasn't there a super old like PC game like in the early 90s? I remember. I have this vague memory of this thing called King's Quest.
Yeah, it was like the 80s, but the more popular ones were from the 90s.
Okay.
And this is like, and then what they did was in the late 90s, they like completely forgot about all the games they had made and made this really shitty one. And they were like, well, we're not making it anymore. So everybody's kind of up in arms about them finishing the series right, so these people made this game, and it's pretty confusing so far.
Nice.
Story wise but if you want to check it out and download it for your own personal computer, you can go to tsl-game.com.
okay.
And anything I expect a check in the mail.
Yeah, for your plugging there. Any other things you've been consuming recently?
No, you can move on.
Okay, all right. Mark, you've been checking anything out recently?
I just watched the Twin Peaks. I guess it's the prequel, but I haven't watched any of Twin Peaks ever, so I watched the prequel Fire Walk With Me before I started the series.
It's a movie, right?
It's a movie, yeah. It's like 2 hours. I guess it tells the story of everything that happens before the Twin Peaks series starts. That everybody else, when they watched it, when it was happening, watched it after the show was over.
Mm-hmm.
But I watched it before the series started, as was recommended to me. And as with any David Lynch movie, you're like, just at first you're like, okay, all right, this is cool, this is weird, some weird stuff starts happening, and then like halfway through you're like, where am I? What is going on? And it kind of, you know, veers off a little bit with, as a lot of David Lynch movies do. But I love that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I just watched that, and now I'm gonna start the pilot of Twin Peaks probably tomorrow or something.
Yeah, because all of those episodes are up on Netflix Instant.
Yeah, they're all on Instant, but Fire Walk With Me is not. So I would recommend. I mean, I guess you could probably start with the pilot if you wanted to, but I think it's good to start with this prequel because it kind of gives you like a feel for the town, and I guess it does that.
Yeah, the things that are going to be happening soon.
But it's
show.
Weird, man. It's really, really weird. If you like David Lynch, or if you just like movies that'll make you. Like immediately when it's over, you just want to go and read everyone's theory on what is going on. I would definitely recommend that because you're like, what does this mean? What does that mean? And then you see all this stuff when you're watching the movie and you don't really get it. But then you go on and you see someone that's like, oh, this meant that, this meant that, this meant that.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Have you seen, like, how familiar are you with David Lynch's filmography? Have you seen a bunch of his stuff?
I first saw Mulholland Drive probably a year ago, and I just that was it for me. After Mulholland Drive,
that movie is so crazy.
I was like, I have to see everything this guy's done now. So I saw Mulholland Drive, and then I watched Lost Highway, and then Blue Velvet, and then Wild at Heart, and then I still need to see Eraserhead, and I think I'm forgetting another one.
Okay.
Dune,
yeah. Yeah, Dune, and his newest one, Inland Empire, I still need to see. But Mulholland Drive is my favorite.
Yeah.
God, I love that movie.
It's so ridiculous. All right, cool. Anything else you can think of you've been checking out?
I just started reading Judd Apatow's book, A Collection of Short Stories. I found this funny.
Okay.
It's just like a probably like 10 short stories. Some of them are funny, some of them aren't, but that he just compiled. And Jonathan Ames wrote one of them, who wrote Bored to Death on HBO. And Paul Feig wrote one that I just read about. It was all about... the timeline of Freaks and Geeks, which was really interesting. So because it kind of took it from them writing it and them writing different drafts of it to doing the pilot, to the pilot getting picked up, to the pilot, like the shows the pilot was going up against, or the series was going up against, and how NBC rescheduled the show like so many different times, and just like the whole like emotional journey like Judd Apatow and Paul Feig went on for Freaks and Geeks. So it was really interesting. So it's a cool bunch of short stories, and yeah, I just started it, but I think it's going to be pretty good.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. Big fans of Freaks and Geeks, or I am anyway. I don't know if... Tyler, have you seen Freaks and Geeks yet?
No.
Okay.
The complete series sat on my DVD library for like a year, but I never read it. I watched it. It wasn't mine, so it's gone now.
Gotcha. Yeah, I would definitely recommend checking that out because it's a pretty awesome show. Canceled before its time, unfortunately. Speaking of being canceled before its time, believe it or not, that was not a transition that I did on purpose. There is a TV show called The Chicago Code, which I've talked about extensively on this podcast before, and it was just canceled. And I'm not happy about that, obviously. I wrote this huge...
Say hi to terriers for me.
I know. I mean, it's like every single show that... I
see you in hell.
Try to latch onto over the past year has been canceled. Like, this is the third, like, huge one that I can think of following Terriers and Lights Out. And
No Ordinary Family.
I did not really watch No Ordinary Family to the same
degree. It got canceled too, Ben.
To the same degree of enjoyment.
You got the reverse Midas touch.
Ooh, Running Wild.
I watched a little bit of that, you too, yeah. But the Chicago Code was great. It was, you know, it's one of those things that's kind of like Justified, where it's kind of episodic at some points, but there really is kind of a longer arc to the season that really ties everything together. And that's what I love watching in television. And I wrote this big kind of reaction piece to the news of the Chicago Code being canceled at geektyrant.com. So if you just search the Chicago Code, you'll find it there at that site. And, you know, to be completely fair, most of that was just like me kind of fueling my rage through, you know, channeling my rage into this one particular post. So I probably made some arguments in there that weren't necessarily as accurate as I would have liked. But I wrote this like instantly after I found out, and I should have been a lot more clear about, you know, a lot of my article was talking about the kind of decline of serialized television. And obviously with shows like Mad Men and stuff like that being as popular as they are, I should have specified that I meant the decline of serialized network television, because networks don't have the ability to get into these kind of niche markets like the cable networks do. Because they have so much more freedom, because people have to pay extra money to see that stuff. When you're working as a network, you have to be as broad as possible to pull in all these people that, you know, that are watching your stations and whatnot. And you just have to, I don't know. I'm surprised that Community is still around, basically, because of how kind of narrow that show's fan base is. But I guess it's like just hanging on enough, and luckily they did get renewed for a third season, so they're going to be coming back. We'll talk about Community in just a second, but yeah, I'm disappointed at the people, not at Fox.
The lazy Americans, yeah, lazy, you know, TV watchers, which right. I took offense to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Fox is just doing their jobs. They've canceled Firefly, they've canceled Arrested Development, and a lot of people look at them as this kind of villainous network that just cancels good stuff. And it is good stuff, but the reason that they have to cancel it, I mean, it's a business decision they're making. They can't justify keeping something on that nobody, you know, that like a large group of people doesn't watch, regardless of its quality or not. So I'm not really mad at Fox, per se. And Sean Ryan, who's the creator of both Terriers and The Chicago Code, also wrote this thing about how he's not mad at Fox, you know. So if the creator of the show, I mean, the guy who's kind of feeling the most sting from this cancellation, I'm sure, is, if even he is not really that mad about the situation, then I don't think the rest of us can be. But anyway, I mean, I hope the Chicago Code finds life elsewhere. There's talks that it might maybe go to another network like TNT or something, because I believe Southland went through kind of a similar thing where it got canceled and then brought back up on TNT, so maybe the Chicago Code has a little bit of hope there. But I think because of how great that show looked, they're probably not going to be able to keep it up with a budget, you know, that kind of comes along with a network TV show. So there's like the double-edged sword there.
Yeah,
so
I think it could definitely work like in a Friday Night Lights, and I know they did Damages this way too, where it's on DirecTV at the same time at a smaller budget, but it still can give fans a satisfying conclusion.
Yeah,
I don't know if it'll work like that with Chicago Code. How many episodes did it have?
I'm not entirely certain, but they actually have two episodes that are that haven't aired yet that are going to air. And Sean Ryan and a couple of the other writers and stuff have said, I think fans of the show are going to be pleased with the way that it wraps up. So it's not going to be, you know, one of those scenarios where it just completely leaves you hanging. So they probably saw it coming a little bit during the production of the show. But anyway, if the Chicago Code the Chicago Code does find life elsewhere, or if it, you know, one day comes to Netflix Instant or something. If you guys still haven't seen it, I would definitely recommend checking out. It's worth watching, even if it is only one season. Same obviously goes for Terriers and Lights Out, like I said. So that's what I've been checking out
and
recently.
And The Good Guys.
The Good Guys, yes. Tyler's a big
awesome
fan of the
show.
Bradley Whitford.
he aged like 3 years, I feel like.
Yeah, that guy, he seems like a hard liver, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody who just kind of...
Bradley Whitford, if you party with Bradley Whitford, man, you're not waking up for days.
You're going to die. The mustache drawn on your face.
The one last thing that I wanted to mention before we jump into our main review is the season finale of Community. It's called For a Few Paintballs More. Did you guys both get a chance to see this? Anyone?
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. Tyler?
I was actually in the scene, just like Mark was in 30 Rock.
you're covered with paintballs.
That may be false. That may be false. Maybe.
Did you see it, Tyler?
I did. I watched it, yes.
Okay. What did you think about it?
You were definitely saying that the show has like a small niche following, and I'm starting to see that the show is kind of like, I don't want to say like spinning off out of control, because it really isn't, but it's starting to like get so ridiculous that people are going to be like, what the hell just happened in this? Like nothing is progressing really. It's just like a ridiculous episode after ridiculous episode. But I guess if you're looking for that, it was pretty, you know, enjoyable to watch. I mean, there was some Star Wars stuff, I guess. I mean, they had to make a point to actually say, oh yeah, now we're doing Star Wars now, you know, like
yeah,
what Abed always says. So I was kind of thought that was pretty stupid, because obviously if you're not picking up on that, you know,
right.
You know, you're an idiot.
Yeah. And especially with like the opening titles being done in the Star Wars style
clear,
and all that
it
stuff.
It was like a clear just running over someone and then reversing it with the, you know, like, oh yeah, we're doing Star Wars. By the way, we're not doing the spaghetti Western anymore.
Yeah. And this is a problem that the show has had for all of its second season, I think, where it does concentrate more on like the themed episodes than actually progressing a narrative along. And I don't know. I'm really surprised that it's been picked up for season three. I'm glad that it has, because it's still one of my favorite shows. And like you're saying, Tyler, it is kind of coming off the rails a little bit with these themed episodes, where, you know, they did one earlier this season where it was a like a parody of My Dinner with Andre. And like, how many people have seen that? Like, yeah. You know, they're getting really, really specific with all of their references and stuff, which is great for the fans of the show. And I'm glad that they're kind of catering to them, because it's so often, you know, a situation like with the Chicago Code where you have to kind of go more broad. And I'm glad Community's just saying, okay, screw it, we're going and just gonna kind of make our audience as happy as possible, and just, you know, to whatever end that may be. So
cancellation.
Yeah, probably ultimate cancellation. Yes. But I think the part one and part two finale were both really enjoyable to watch, and I'm not really going to give anything away because Mark hasn't seen it yet, but I do like...
Allison Brie's hot.
That's all you need to know.
Oh, now I'm not even going to watch
Spoiler
it.
Spoiler alert. She's not coming on the podcast either.
I like how it ended up with Pierce. That's all I'll say. Because you kind of expect it to end one way, and then they just go, nope, we're not going to do that. We're just going to kind of leave you wondering exactly what's going to happen. So I appreciated, you know, it's not like the ballsiest move that they could have made, but it is, again, not traditional, just like the entire rest of Community as a series. So the two-part finale, the first part is called A Fistful of Paintballs, and the second is called For a Few Paintballs More. That was on NBC this past week, so I'm sure that'll be up on Hulu, or it probably is actually already. So check
that. Are they getting a 4-year degree at Greendale? Like, I don't. Is it a community college, or how are they going to?
It's like Saved by the Bell. I think it'll just keep going. Like,
are they only taking like 6 credit hours a semester? Like,
I think,
3 credit hours a semester?
I think what's happening is they're doing a season. Like, each season lasts a semester instead of a year.
No, because they started. There were 2 semesters this season, and then there were 2 semesters in the first season, because they took Spanish 1 and Spanish 2 in season 1, and then they took 2 different.
I hope they have a summer. They go to a summer camp or a summer get a summer job.
And then they don't. Do they have any jobs?
Sands Beach Club needs new employees.
What was your question?
Leah Remini reprises her role as daughter of the hotel owner.
Leon Carosi is still there.
Hey, yo, hey, Zach, hey, let's go watch the fireworks.
What was your title? What was your?
I was wondering if any of them had like jobs outside of school, unless they're going, because you know it's kind of cost inefficient to go to school for 3 credit hours at a time and not have any money flow.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess
then they buy all this weird crap. I don't know, man.
That should really be explained in some sort of webisode.
Lots of questions.
All right, cool. Well, let's go ahead and move on into our review of Hudson Hawk.
Bruce Willis is back in business.
Thanks for saving me, tough guy.
And business is booming.
I was afraid you weren't going to drop by.
Hudson Hawk.
That excites me.
Check, please.
The best cat burglar that ever lived.
I didn't want to do it. All I wanted was a cappuccino.
But he can't retire.
Maybe nobody told you. I quit stealing.
If he wants to keep on living.
This is a brand new tuxedo!
Watch your step. Hold your breath. Hang on for dear life. And catch the Hawk.
Good plan, Junior.
Bruce Willis, Danny Aiello, Andy McDowell. Hudson Hawk.
Sounds like a party.
All right, so Hudson Hawk is a movie directed by Michael Lehman. It came out in 1991. It stars Bruce Willis and Danny Aiello. Mark, what did you think about Hudson Hawk?
It was completely absurdly the most ridiculous thing I've seen in a long time.
did you like it, or was it so bad that it was just not even an enjoyable viewing experience?
I think if I would have gone into the theater expecting to see like Die Hard, I would have hated it. But I knew that it was going to be ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Bruce Willis wrote the story. The story was by Bruce Willis and some other guy. So if you have that in the back of your head and you're like Frank Stallone is also in this movie. So if you know Bruce Willis wrote it and Frank Stallone's in it, you just have to turn off your brain and be like, okay, let's see what these guys are going to cook up.
Yeah. Tyler, what did you think about Hudson Hawk?
See, I usually do that with movies too, Mark, but I thought this was terrible and I did not enjoy watching it at all.
I definitely would not Pretty have finished awful. It if it wasn't for this.
Yeah, I was done by the when he started singing the first song. I was like, this is so stupid.
There's a musical just for no reason, like 15 minutes in or something. They just start singing, not to anybody, just to the audience, to the camera.
Yeah, well, they keep time with the song, but it's still just so dumb. And even the guy, he's like, why don't you use a watch? I'm like, right. Yeah, he's right. Use a fucking watch, because then you can do other things during that time period. Like the only good the song does is you know when it starts and when it stops, and you don't know what time it's at in the middle if you try to do something else.
Yeah, it makes no sense. That's like the premise of the. You could tell that Bruce Willis was just like sitting around. He's like, okay, let's do a thief movie where they just don't have watches, and then somebody's like, Mr. Willis, why wouldn't they have it? It's just like, shut up! No,
it's a good idea. They sing a song!
And that day, he couldn't get cappuccino somewhere. So he's like, all right, this whole movie, I'm not going to be able to get cappuccino.
It's going to be hilarious.
I just wanted to point out that I thought I was watching the wrong movie to begin with. I don't know if you guys had the same thing, but I almost checked again, and then I saw Bruce Willis's name. Because this movie starts out with this absurd, like, Renaissance humor, like with Leonardo da Vinci, and it's just ridiculous.
You're gonna make it my thing. You're gonna ruin my plane.
They kind of act like the audience has no idea or has never heard of Leonardo da Vinci. So like, we have to actually show these people who he is by like doing some much needed Mona Lisa humor and flying machine humor.
Very, very relevant nowadays.
And they show him living in this castle.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
The Da Vinci Castle, and there's a giant
Da Vinci Castle
that's cut off, kind of like in Lost, actually. Exactly. Like this one has 5 toes. It's just sitting right next to this thing, implying that there was once a towering statue right next to the Da Vinci Castle. And then later in the movie, which is one of my favorite parts of this whole movie, The Da Vinci Castle not only still exists in perfect form, not only are some of the same props there that were back in the Renaissance time, but it's not been turned into a national landmark or any sort of museum or historical spot. It's just free reign for villains to walk around completely by themselves inside this castle.
It's definitely a place that can only be sold to villains. It's some sort of evil real estate agent only selling to villains.
We've got this hidden castle that used to belong to, wait for it, Da Vinci.
Oh, man. All right, so, yeah, I guess... I can't say that I hated this movie because I was laughing so much through it. Like, it's not Tyler, we've watched some pretty god awful things on in the history of this podcast.
Yeah.
And this is a lot more lighthearted than a lot of those, and it doesn't try as hard to be realistic. I mean, I think it's so stupid at parts that they at least have a little bit of knowledge of what kind of tone they're going for. So, I can appreciate it for that. But what were you going to say?
Those are the worst movies where they're trying to be real or dramatic and it's still terrible. But it's also this Hudson Hawk falls somewhere between like good funny and like terrible funny, where it's just somewhere in this limbo where you're like, am I seriously watching this? Like, I could be watching something else. Why am I watching Hudson Hawk?
The movie is just so far detached from reality. There's a scene in the bar that I guess Bruce Willis he gets out of jail and he comes back to this bar and they've turned it into this high class bar that he goes, goat cheese pizza. What do you, and,
Before or after he meets the Mario Brothers?
Yeah, the mob bosses are called the Mario Brothers, which is a clever jab at Nintendo culture of the.
And then they
what's a Nintendo?
But he shoots his cup with a gun, and nobody reacts. This is normal. And then Danny Aiello cracks a bottle over the other guy's head, and there's a slight rustle.
That was also one of my favorite parts. Is Frank Stallone has this really kind of stone hard look on his face, and he's staring Bruce Willis down. And Danny Aiello smashes that bottle over the guy's head right next to him. And not only does
anyone move,
no, he doesn't get angry or whatever. He doesn't ever break eye contact with Bruce Willis. I don't care who you are. If somebody smashes a bottle right next to you, you're gonna look to see what happened.
But this ultimate badassery of Frank Stallone.
Yeah,
you guessed it, Frank Stallone.
Lead singer, survivor.
I think before we even get into anything else with this movie, we have to mention just how blatant and ridiculous the gang of characters are that are named after candy bars.
Candy bars. There's Honky Boy, Butterfinger, which probably cost that probably
Kit-Kat.
This movie was such a huge bomb because they probably had to pay Butterfinger like thousands of dollars to use this. Almond Joy, thousands of dollars. Snickers, thousands of dollars.
I've never really understood how that worked because I would assume that Snickers would want their product kind of being like they would pay the production.
I think
to
they
do
would
that.
Want it, but not they wouldn't want to be named after a group of criminals right. that are cartoon characters.
Yeah,
Snickers would give them money. They would sponsor the film.
Right, and let's go ahead and bring up David Caruso really quickly.
I think
I think this is the only time that we will ever need to talk about him in this movie. His character was named Kit Kat, and apparently his shtick was he just dressed up like random people.
And he didn't talk, right?
And he didn't talk. He had business cards
printed up of what he needed to say.
Right.
Which he has unbelievable foresight right. to know exactly what you have to say to go ahead and get those cards printed up, because getting business cards takes a
bit. Beware the blue wire. At one point they're in the Da Vinci castle at the very end of the movie and somebody's like, take care of that Kit Kat, and he's like painted like a statue, like a Greek statue, and he's got like a like some sort of spear or something in his hand. I don't understand the purpose of his character at all. And actually that entire gang just seemed like, I mean, it was so comical.
My
so
favorite
ridiculous.
Quote by the guy that Bruce Willis called Jumbo, I think he was Butterfingers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're in this restaurant in Italy. And he goes to the waiter, he goes, read my lips, steak, burger, French fries. Like, this concept of pasta is so unbelievable to this guy because everyone else is having pasta. It's like, he's like, what pasta? I've only been in America where we have only cheeseburgers and French fries.
Yeah, and he calls the waiter Pierre, and then somebody's like,
Oh, he's, yeah.
Somebody's like, we're in Italy, not France. And then he's like,
same thing or something.
And then like he sees somebody kissing or something across the way, and he's like, oh, to be in love in old Paris. Like, who the hell wrote this movie? And actually, when I look to see who did write this movie, it's a guy named Stephen E. D'Souza. And like Mark said, the story was by Bruce Willis and some dude named Robert Kraft. But the guy who actually wrote the screenplay, one of them, was Stephen E. D'Souza. And Tyler, you are going to be intensely familiar with this guy, because I'm gonna go through his IMDb here and name off some things that he's written. So let's start with early on, 48 Hours, the Nick Nolte, Eddie Classic. Murphy movie. And then moving up into one of Tyler's favorites, Commando, which has been playing nauseam on G4 recently. What's that?
Movies that don't suck.
Yeah, exactly. Jumpin' Jack Flash, the Whoopi Goldberg movie, but then getting a little bit more into the badassery, The Running Man, Die Hard, and Die Hard 2. So, okay.
Die Hard's my favorite. Die Hard 2 is my favorite.
And then also, speaking of your favorites, he also wrote the Jean-Claude Van Damme classic that you would claim is a classic, Street Fighter, and Judge Dredd, and Beverly Hills Cop 3, and the movie Knock Off, also starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. So, like,
don't forget Flintstones. He wrote the Flintstones.
The Flintstones. This guy has got such ridiculous filmography. And Hudson Hawk fits pretty well in, I think, with that, as far as just, like, being totally unbelievable.
It's somewhere in between Flintstones and another 48 Hours or Die Hard.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. So Street
Fighter was pretty ridiculous, I think. So maybe that Street Fighter, I remember being pretty one-liner-ish.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah, totally
outrageous.
And so, there's a lot of one-liners in
video game.
Yes, there is.
I mean, like there's a part where I don't remember the action scene that takes place that kind of gets him to this point, but Bruce Willis is in the back of an ambulance he, you know, gets kind of like somehow attached to a blanket
that amazing.
Kicks him out into the back, and they're like driving down the freeway, and he's like hanging on for dear life on, you know, face down on this, table on wheels. And, somebody flicks a cigarette out the window, and he catches the cigarette, smokes it, and then disgustingly says menthol and throws it away. Like, why? Why is that even there? I don't understand.
Well, you have to remember he kept going and had to pay the tolls as well.
He didn't not only pay the tolls, but he changed lanes into an exact change lane.
Right.
Because he had change, and he didn't want to wait for a receipt or
hold
the exact.
And here on my notes, I have Newton's laws of physics no longer apply, because he was actually gaining speed to go through the toll booth.
There's pretty amazing stuff. I mean, this movie is really weird with the physics and stuff like that too. There's a lot of weird transitions. Like the editing, I found was kind of strange. Like there's this one particular spot right after the opening heist when Bruce Willis and Danny Aiello are singing Swinging on a Star, and they kind of break through the top, and they look over the side of this building, and they jump onto the awning that's down there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it shows them falling, and then when he lands, like right when the characters are supposed to hit the awning, it actually cuts to Bruce Willis sitting in a chair inside Frank Stallone's apartment. And it's like, wait a second, am I seeing this right? Did they fall through the awning, and did he land in that chair? Or like, it really
there's never any sense of danger in this whole, like the whole movie, you're like, Bruce Willis is going to make it to the next thing. There's no chance anyone's gonna get hurt.
Yeah
At one point they jumped out of an exploding building, and we don't see them land, and the next scene they're just fine.
yeah There's a lot of jumping from really high places and a lot of landing on granite and stone, where they don't even like fake it like they do today, where people will at least try to put like a dive roll move into it to like explain away the distance that they're falling.
Another thing that didn't make sense, I remember when there was the fight between Hawk and Danny Aiello, they roll down these stairs and as they, like, they're rolling down these all these stairs, and then they're fighting, and then like immediately an ambulance is there. Like I think like three ambulances are there, like immediately, like pick them up, go, like no calls were made, nobody else.
The EMT is just like, look at that fight. We better go pick those guys up.
Apparently, in Italy, there's just ambulances patrolling all.
I think there's actually an explanation for that particular one, because if I remember correctly, they jump on that ambulance and then drive into the back of a truck. So that was like a whole setup thing. Yeah. But that still doesn't explain the perfect time.
That movie doesn't deserve that good an explanation.
Yeah, that's true. None of this movie deserves any sort of explanation like that. But I mean, you know, we're talking about like the falling from a high distance. There's this one part where Bruce Willis, like, you know, breaks into the Vatican to steal Da Vinci's codex, and then he ziplines out the belt and he lands on a light post. Like, he just drops.
Yeah.
Like, a cop shoots the belt loop and or the belt and like breaks it in two, and he happens to land right on a light post, and then he rolls backwards over onto a car with chickens and stuff onto it, and he's like kicking them off. And then he, as the car takes a sharp turn, he slides off of the top of the car and then physically lands in the chair opposite Andy McDowell as he's supposed to be meeting her for dinner.
Oh God, that scene was amazing. And then she's like, I thought you were going to be late. And he's like, nah. This is how I show up to every date. Would you guys want to talk about Andy McDowell?
Yeah, go for it.
She, I feel like she was just the go-to early 90s, like, girlfriend type. Like, Multiplicity, what else?
Groundhog Day.
Like, she's the same... She's Andy McDowell in all these movies, and I can't explain it. She just got all these roles, and then I guess it stopped like around the late 90s.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely her peak.
She was in every movie in like in the early 90s as the same exact character. That John Travolta one, Phenomenon.
Yep.
Same exact person.
I think
I thought that was someone else. I thought that was the lady from.
Was it? I'll look.
Yeah, it was the lady from that TNT show.
Oh, no, it wasn't Phenomenon. It was Michael. I'm sorry.
Kira Sedgwick.
It was Michael I was thinking of. I mixed up Michael and Phenomenon.
I'm completely familiar with Kira Sedgwick's filmography.
She had a great line, Andy McDowell, after Bruce Willis told her that he came out of jail. Mm-hmm. She goes, this was an actual written dialogue in this WGA script. You were in the joint doing hard time.
Yeah, and she's like, I don't know what this says about me, but I'm kind of attracted to that or something, like some sort of stupid line right after that. But she, I don't know, I mean, I think the more ridiculous aspects of that character is like her secret past as a nun.
Yeah.
Like, she's just, you know, that's just kind of mixed in wherever it's convenient for the story. Like, as soon as she's getting close to kind of giving Bruce Willis some action, she'll just back out, and that's the explanation for it.
Yep.
Just so it's like the Cappuccino thing. He just gets so close and then it's taken away at the last second.
Yeah. And this guy just came out of jail, man. He just wants some action.
And it's all about, like, you know, delaying the gratification until the very end of the movie. So this whole thing is just, like, I mean, you can see a lot of this stuff coming, and then there's sequences like the one at the very end where you're like, I don't care who you are, you couldn't see this coming and how ridiculous this whole thing is. Like, you know, obviously they've got the whole kind of subplot of trying to find these three little pieces of diamond to put together and turn stuff into gold, like alchemy.
Turn lead into gold. Because another one of my favorite lines here was spoken by the evil boss, Sandra Bernhard's guy. I forget his name right now.
Yeah.
But another great line was, money will always be paper, but gold will always be gold. What?
Yeah, this guy, I mean...
Those don't really contradict each other.
That's right. Put the word but in there, because one cancel out the other.
You just got to say, money's always going to be paper, and gold's going to be gold.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Like the villains in this, like the mafia, like I don't understand their, like, what are their goals aside from, you know, because like you've got this guy whose name is George, who I don't even know who plays this character, but he's like it was kind of the older guy,
The butler?
No, not the butler. He's like there's a scene where Bruce Willis and Danny Aiello are like in the apartment near the end, and he's like, they're kind of going back and forth, and George says, I really wish I could come up with this glib repartee that you guys have, but I can't, so I'll just paralyze you. And then they shoot these darts into their neck.
Almost as good as the syringes that Bruce Willis stabs the guy's face.
Oh yeah, that was something sick.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah. So they're just like, I don't know. They're completely paralyzed from the neck down, apparently, for a good 10 minutes.
That was when they're like, all right, we're just going hard comedy. We're just going to have the audience just rolling at this point. And it was just like, come on.
Yeah, that was, and like, you know, they're trying to have, I guess they're not trying to have any sense of realism at all, because when Andy McDowell enters into that particular scene after Willis and Aiello have already been paralyzed, she's standing there and like, I don't remember, I think it's Almond Joy, the woman gangster or whatever, like slowly loads her blowgun and says like, Annie, banana fan of fo fanny, and then shoots her neck. It's like, what is happening right now? Why did anyone approve this and read it? Like, you know what? Yeah, let's keep that in there. That's good.
That's going to make the people that are fans of that song laugh.
And this is also, I should mention, right after a scene in which Butterfinger reads Green Eggs and Ham.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then,
what?
And then says, do you want me to rape them? And no one says anything. And they just say, why don't you just read your book? And then he starts reading Green Eggs and Ham out loud. It's like, we get it. This guy's overgrown. He's not very intelligent. But you're actually having him read Dr. Seuss out loud to us to illustrate this point and really kind of hammer it home. Oh man. I can't.
Does anyone know why Sandra Bernhard was just writhing on that table singing I Got the Power over and over again for these 12 businessmen in suits just sitting at a table just watching Sandra Bernhard go, I got the power. Just
and she wasn't over. Saying any other lyrics
over.
To the song.
Right, exactly.
Just
the chorus to this I Got the Power song over and over and over again.
I think that the only explanation for that is, okay, this was a popular song in 1991.
How long was that going on, though, before we joined the action? I mean, it could...
Oh, man. I don't know. Tyler, did you have anything written down that you wanted to talk about with this movie?
I think we've covered everything. I didn't know who the bad guys were for a really long time because they kept switching up who... was the antagonist.
Yeah. Yeah, you got the Mario brothers, you got George, you got the Butterfinger crew, like you don't know who you're working with.
I made a Bruce Willis Princess Peach analogy in my notes.
Okay.
Auction scene, the cast must have auctioned off their talent. I thought the head of the CIA was Lee Marvin for a really long time until I saw the credits.
Marvin. That's
it was James Coburn.
Yeah.
Good old James Coburn.
Wait, are we still mentioning the Mario Brothers? This is like by timestamp.
Yeah.
WTF, so much stupid stuff. In one scene,
that should be the tagline of the poster. WTF, so much stupid stuff.
At one point, Andy McDowell's dress is like hung over her shoulder, like kind of slid off her shoulder. And then the camera goes and talks to Five Tone Tony, whatever his name is. And then it comes back, and the strap's back up. It's just one of those things. And then back, it's off again.
Right.
I'll assume they survived jumping out the window. Where did they get bazooka ammo? I mean, they jacked the bazooka from these bad guys who, I only thought he had two because he only shot two.
Yeah.
But then they have it, and now they have, like, 30 bullets for it. I guess you can just buy that from IKEA or something.
Whenever there's a gun in this movie that's just ready to go. Well, in any action movie, the gun's just ready to go.
But this one, I mean, in other action movies, I feel like that's excusable because it's just normal bullets. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like Tyler says,
it's a specialized bazooka that had like suction cup bullets.
Right, and that's the thing. Like, it's such a specific type of bazooka, too. It's not like you could even go to a bazooka store if one existed and just buy like regular ones.
I need a bullet that has a plunger head on the one side with a timed bomb attached to it. You guys have any of those?
Oh man.
And like my favorite part of that is like they shoot right when those bazookas are first introduced, they're in that apartment and they shoot one up against the wall and he's like, I hope you get out of your paralyzation with 5 seconds left to defuse the bomb. And it's got a 2-minute clock on it, and then Danny Aiello, I think, trips Snickers and he ends up shooting himself in the head with it, and it suctions onto him, but that timer is only set for like 10 seconds and he just blows up right there.
Which then blows up the other one, which...
Right, and I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, the timestamps didn't match up on the two bombs.
Right, yeah, exactly.
They were all set at 2 minutes.
Yeah, that's what you were talking about where they jumped out of the window, because I think they survived that fall as well.
Yeah, they fall down, but we don't see them hit the ground. It goes on to the next scene.
Right.
There are multiple scenes where they leap out of tall windows and just hit the ground and keep
and
on
fine.
Going.
Everything's
like,
fine.
There's like a battle at the Da Vinci Castle at the very end where like, first of all, I don't know if you guys remember this part, but Bruce Willis grabs this rope after he thinks Danny Aiello has been killed, and he's like, "You!" and just yells at the guy down below and swings down and kicks the guy, and somehow the rope is the exact length
that it needs to be
for him to be able to do this. And he just leaps off of the building without checking the length of the rope or anything. Like, it could have been, you know, 50 feet longer, and he just would have hit
the ground. It's almost that he knew he was in Hudson Hawk. I know I'm in this movie Hudson Hawk, so I can do anything.
In that part there was
the decapitation scene when he cuts the head off of the guy with the butler. Yeah. And then he says, I won't be seeing you at that hat convention in July.
There are so many one-liners you could have used there, and he went hat convention.
Yeah, and it's not like they were talking about hats ever in this movie. That's a complete non sequitur.
It's just for people that are watching to be like, wait a minute, heads. Hats go on heads. He doesn't have a head anymore. Won't be.
You might as well have just said the makeup convention, the scarf convention, anything. The haircut convention. Booyah right there.
Yeah, there's also a part where I think it gets into more like almost literal slapstick when they're like on top of the Da Vinci castle and I forget which character he's fighting. I think it's George, actually, the head of the CIA, fighting Hudson Hawk, and like he starts slapping him back and forth, and then like he walks away and Bruce Willis is still like writhing back and forth as if he's being hit, and then the guy does like a huge flying drop kick, and then Bruce Willis ducks and he lands on a moving car like 40 stories below and is just okay. And then the car ramps off of a cliff and explodes midair. And then at the very end of the movie, Danny Aiello walks out with charred clothing and says airbags are what saved his life.
Can you believe it?
No. And sprinklers in the back seat. There were sprinklers as well.
Yeah, because it's like a custom limo, and we're supposed to believe that he can survive that.
I didn't believe that.
We're talking about all the bad one-liners. One of my favorite is for some reason Sandra Bernhardt just starts inexplicably killing the mafia guys, like the candy.
Her character was just how does that character even happen?
I don't know. She's like wearing ridiculous clothes, like this headset piece that's made out of like pipe cleaners or something.
I don't understand. how that could happen.
I don't know. So she starts shooting all these people just one by one with these crossbow arrows in the Da Vinci castle. And then the butler walks up and he's like, double crossbow for a double cross. And she's like, oh, you're dry British humor.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. I cannot believe this is a real movie that I'm watching right now.
Oh, man.
I thought Hudson Hawk was like a comic book character. That's why things were so ridiculous. But it wasn't.
No.
One of my other favorite one-liners was there was just these henchmen sitting in a room somewhere, just making small talk, and they're bored. And so he's reading a phone book. And so he says, there's 600 wongs in the phone book. And then the other henchman goes, that's a hell of a lot of wong numbers.
And like the other guy doesn't even laugh. Like they're just like, that's the kind of dynamic that these guys have. They're just making wordplay jokes back and forth all day.
This is what happened, I think, when you were had a job like that before the internet. You just read the phone book.
Yeah.
To kill time.
Yeah, unbelievable. Man, for a movie that's supposed to be about characters who commit heists based on songs, they only do it twice. They do Swinging on a Star at the very beginning, and then they actually don't even steal anything when they sing Side by Side at the end. They're literally walking side by side, just shooting off seemingly unlimited grenades into the Da Vinci Castle, which, again, they're destroying this castle
since the time should be a museum.
Right, yeah. And they just, like, they count down glibly, like, 3, 2, 1, and then guys blow up off the side of the building.
Bruce Willis' character does have respect for Leonardo da Vinci, though, because at the end when they're flying in the machine, he's like, oh, Leonardo, like, you bastard.
And then, yeah, that was also one of my, like, you know, they're flying around in this like, hang glider machine that Da Vinci
I'm convinced that was the whole reason they put that first scene in there, for that and the last.
Just for that. So they land, you know, Bruce Willis and Andy McDowell land on the grass with these Italian, I'm guessing, children running around, and they just like they just overtake the hangar.
To symbolize goodness.
And I'm like, these kids are savages. They're just stealing.
It's good children at the
look,
end.
Look, Mama, entertainment. Bruce Willis landed from the sky.
They're stealing a priceless work of art.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I think they just broke up the pieces for like wooden swords and stuff.
I can just see Michael Lamon just be like, we'll just have these children at the end that symbolize goodness.
Tyler, I think you were talking really quickly before we started recording about how this movie reminded you a little bit of that Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, The Quest.
Yeah, because at the beginning there's the Leonardo da Vinci era, and then they flash forward to the future, and then at the end of the movie, I guess Leonardo da Vinci finishes up his little storybook and closes the book with Bruce Willis. This picture of him throwing his and so I'm like, wait, is he telling a story about the future, or do we somehow enter a Da Vinci time warp later in the future where things become primitive again? I don't know.
Excellent point.
But the same thing happened in The Quest where Van Damme's telling this story in a bar. And so he finishes up the story in the bar, and then a book closes. So someone was reading a book about a guy telling a story in a bar.
Yeah.
Which is pretty confusing.
Yeah, I think there's no reason for any movie to open to begin and end with a book opening and closing.
We're
reading a book. Right. There's no need for
it's based
at all.
On a book. Okay.
I want to make a movie where the movie ends, the book closes, somebody presses stop on their iPad, and then like a vinyl record stops spinning, and then someone like exits windows, and like all these things going on at the end of the movie.
I'm gonna write a book to the first sentences, and they started watching this movie, and then at the end of it, and the movie was over. The end of the book.
All right, well, let's go around and just do some kind of brief concluding thoughts on this movie. Tyler, let's start with you.
Shitty, don't watch it.
Mark?
I can't wait till they reboot it with Chris Nolan directing Hudson Hawk Begins.
And Chris Pine as Hudson Hawk. I think this movie, like, if you've listened this far in the podcast and you've laughed at the points where we've laughed, I think it's worth seeing because I think you'll have fun with it. But there is no universe in which this can be considered a good movie.
You can definitely turn your brain off. You don't need to pay attention to it. You can just kind of take it for how ridiculous it is.
Yeah.
I think this podcast is a good substitute for watching the movie.
It probably is, yeah.
In like an hour, you're done instead of an hour and a half.
That's true. All right, so Tyler, let's go ahead and rev up the Apple II and talk about what we're going to be watching next week.
All right. Well, for next week, we had the listeners decide, Ben and Mark. And we're going to be watching Sean Connery's Zardoz.
Oh, man.
Not Hawk the Slayer like I wanted, but a 3-1 vote got us Zardoz. So tune in for that. Is on Instant Watch. So check out that next week. And let's see what the Apple II, the three movies that the Apple II wants us to choose from this week. All right, looks like the genre for 2 weeks from now for the movie was film noir, and we're looking at Scarlet Street, which is a popular film noir from the 40s, a Kansas City Confidential, which I know nothing about, and Raging Bull, which
may or may not be a film noir movie. I don't think it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a boxing movie. Directed by Martin Scorsese. I think it's actually in black and white, though. So
it
maybe,
is in black and
maybe
white.
There's the
boom. Control. That counts.
I'll
post that question on our Facebook page, or you can email us which one of the three you want us to watch. But the three again are Scarlet Street, Kansas City Confidential, or Raging Bull.
Nice.
I'm going to put my vote for Scarlet Street right now.
You're going to go ahead. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you guys, you know, this podcast is available for free in iTunes, so you can check us out there. Leave us a review. You can subscribe to it and all that stuff. Check us out, like Tyler mentioned, on Facebook. You can also send us an email at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail anytime at 904-469-6566. We also have a Twitter page, which you can follow us on Twitter at NJNMPodcast. We have two new Twitter followers this week, at DC Comics Art and at Uncle Louie. So thanks for the...
Bill Goldberg's uncle.
Right, right, yeah.
Exactly. Apparently.
That's a crossover from last week, or a reference from last week. But so yeah, check us out. You know, you can get in touch with us any way that you want through there. Let us know what you think of the show, what you thought of Hudson Hawk if you happen to watch it, or what you think about Zardoz, the really, really ridiculous Sean Connery movie that we're going to be watching next week. We don't have any emails or anything this week, so Tyler, let's go ahead and wrap up the character name game.
Oh yeah. Forgot we were doing that. Character's name for this week is John Thatcher.
I think I know what this is. Do you have any idea, Mark?
I have no idea.
I'm going to guess Master and Commander Far Side of the World.
Oh, no.
No.
Incorrect.
Wow.
Okay. Incorrect,
I was
Mr.
pretty
movie.
Sure that was Paul Bettany's character in that movie, and he was in Priest, which opened in wide release this past weekend. So
that would have been a good guess had you been correct.
Right. Yes, thank you for that. Let's see. Any sort of hints that you can provide? Maybe a
yes.
Year?
John Thatcher is played by the well-known actor Christopher Casanova.
I've never heard of that person in
Chris
my life.
Chris Casanova.
It may be pronounced Casanova. I don't know.
Okay.
Because he's that popular.
Right. How about a year that this movie came out?
A year.
Year
2001.
2001 movie.
Isn't that when Master and Commander? No, is that when Master and Commander?
I think it was 03.
Oh, yep. It was Master and Commander. No, I'm just kidding.
John Thatcher 2001?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has to have some sort of connection to a movie that was released this past weekend, which I think would be Bridesmaids and Priest. I think we're the only two. Man,
Thor is out of contention. It's just
Thor,
this week.
Yeah, right? Thor is out of contention.
Bridesmaids.
He did Thor. Ben did Thor last week.
Yep. Maybe a director, Tyler? A director of this movie?
Brian Helgeland.
Oh, my God.
Ooh.
Deep Rising.
No.
That was, I think, 90s. That was in the 90s.
Man, you've stumped us this week, Tyler. Normally we get it way quicker than this.
Sure.
Maybe a another famous person who's in this movie, who stars in the movie?
Yeah, I'll give you somebody who stars in it.
You're gonna look down for seven film person.
Let's see, person in crowd. Okay. Rufus Sewell.
It's not Dark City, is it?
No.
No, because that was the dude who directed
Sam Raimi's movie.
No.
From like 93.
Oh, Alex Proyas.
Yeah, that was Dark City. 2001, man, this is
Equilibrium.
Berenice Bejo.
I don't know who that is.
Who is the first top billed guy?
James Purefoy? Oh, the top billing?
Yeah.
Heath Ledger.
Oh, Knight's Tale.
Yes, that's correct.
Knight's Tale.
John Thatcher was the father of Will Thatcher, played by Christopher Casanova, and A Knight's Tale stars Paul Bettany as Geoffrey Chaucer.
Yep.
Of course.
That's the Paul Bettany connection.
Damn.
Of course, man. Yeah, that was a good one. We were. That was we were.
A Knight's Tale, where we will rock you, is sung by medieval crowds.
It was written back then, but then it was lost for years, and then found Da Vinci's castle and found the notes and music for it.
I definitely saw that in theater.
Knight's Tale is actually a documentary.
Yeah. Oh, no, definitely.
All right.
Boy,
so
the Nike symbol, that was all found in Da Vinci's castle. Not many people know that.
All right. Well, let's go around the circle and tell everybody where they can find more of our work on the internet. Tyler, let's start with you.
You can find me on the Solar Sentinel, at Destageddon, at NotJustNewMovies.com from time to time.
All right, Mark Carosello, where can people track you down?
I have a Tumblr, Mark, M-A-R-C, is hungry, .tumblr.com, and I'm on Twitter, at Mark, M-A-R-C, Carosello, C-A-R-U-S-I-E-L-L-O.
Cool. You guys can follow me on Twitter also. I'm at twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing at geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, notjustnewmovies.com, which is the namesake for this podcast. And you can hear me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast as well. Music for this show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com. They are also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out there. And as Tyler mentioned, we will be watching Zardoz next week, which is available on Netflix, Watch, and Instant. So feel free to watch that along with us and shoot us an email, leave us a message, let us know what you think. Thanks to Mark for stopping by and hanging out with us. Good having you.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for Hudson, the gift of Hudson Hawk.
Absolutely. It's the gift that keeps on.
Yeah, right.
So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you guys next week.
Money.